Hello everybody, this is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business, and I'm speaking today to Sanyu Awori, who is from Kenya, and she's with IVRO, which is a global human rights organization working on women's rights, primarily in the Global South, based out of Malaysia. Thank you so much for joining us, Sanyu. It was lovely meeting you, of course, in India recently at the consultation on business and human rights and applying the gender lens. And I wanted to talk about both the aspects of gender and race in our conversation today. So the first question I have is that many companies have been saying that they've made considerable progress in addressing discrimination and equality at workplace, particularly with regard to gender. They have the policies, they comply with laws, and they say that they are seeing some results. What is your view of that?
So we're living in a time when, yes, many companies are stating very publicly that they are committed to gender equality and discrimination at the workplace is on the agenda. And that is progress. But we now need to examine and really dismantle the causes of discrimination, because this is what we know. We know that women at work are still being paid less than men. And this is even when they're doing the same work. And so the gender wage gap continues to cut across sectors and even cut across countries. The recent strike in Spain, when millions of women went on strike to protest the sexist culture, including the gender pay gap, highlights how this is still an issue. We also know about sexual harassment and violence. And Tarana Burke started the Me Too campaign, and we know that this is the reality for many women workers. I mean, a study showed that 90% of our female workers in, you know, Kenya's tea industry have either witnessed or experienced sexual abuse at work, but nearly all said they were afraid to report it for fear of losing their job. And I think just to bring to the agenda that a majority of women are still concentrated at the very bottom of global supply chain in vulnerable employment. And so, I mean, even the clothes that we're wearing right now have been produced by women working 12-hour days. But their pay is so low and that they remain trapped in poverty because of how the system has been set up. So yes, discrimination is on the agenda. And now we need to use this momentum to really examine the causes and dismantle the systems that cause it.
I was talking to Srilata Batliwala, who's on our international advisory board. And what she talks about is the idea of changing the deep culture in an organization. And so that companies say that we do have international standards, we do have our own policies, but it becomes harder to implement them in certain countries because of cultural resistance. And if you apply the human rights framework, there is no such thing as cultural relativity. The rights are the same everywhere. So how do we all combat this idea of the deep culture?
Yes, and I think we need to be very careful when arguments about culture are invoked in relation to women's human rights, because very often culture has been interpreted by a select few to restrict women's rights. And so whenever culture is invoked, we must always ask who's being protected by this. And I'll just give you a little example. So there's a company where a woman employee informally raised the fact that she had experienced sexual harassment by her supervisor, but she was afraid to bring a formal complaint because it wasn't the local culture to speak up, particularly against elders or seniors, both in age as well as in the role. And she was speaking to a senior manager from a different country office who had the power to do something. But once culture was invoked, he let culture prevail. So the question really is, who is being protected when we use the language of culture? And I think the beauty of the human rights system is it says human rights can't look different because of your location. Whether you're on a plantation in Indonesia or a factory in Mexico, human dignity is human dignity.
This is absolutely right. And this is exactly the kind of things companies talk about when they say they have a problem of applying their standards worldwide. And I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done there. Now, you mentioned Indonesia, you mentioned Kenya right now, and which brought me to the next question, which has been your experience in looking firsthand at the condition for women at work on the shop floor or in the factories. How large is the gap compared to the stated principles, and what can be done about it? Is it something that unions have to do it, or should there be unions with women in leadership who should be doing that?
So unfortunately, it's looking quite bleak in that we're seeing a pattern in both regions where labor rights and labor protections are being weakened for the sake of profit. And in particular, the right to unionize and organize collectively is actively suppressed. So union leaders will experience threats or intimidation. It can also be quite hostile for women workers themselves, in that trade unions can also be quite patriarchal. So I think a key way to really address the rights of women workers is ensuring that the right to unionize is safeguarded, is not just in law, but is also in practice. Because then that way we'll also address the other issues that women workers are facing in these regions, which is poor health and safety standards. Maternity leave is still a battleground and unimaginable for many. And I think a key issue also that we need to look at is short-term contracts or fixed duration contracts, which puts workers in a bind and actually makes them afraid to join unions or even object to excessive overtime or sexual harassment with the fear that their contracts will not be renewed. Mm-hmm. And it then short-term contracts put workers at the mercy of their employer, which reinforces a very unequal power dynamic between workers and their employers. And yet it's a key part of the current business model that companies are using.
Absolutely. And of course, this whole informalization of the economy, the so-called Uber effect, only makes it worse. I wanted to now turn to the intersectionality argument that we were speaking about at the beginning of our conversation. Are women of color more vulnerable to discrimination or harassment? And I ask this bearing in mind that when we look at senior management of companies, I mean, Pepsi is one good example, we do see women of color in very senior positions. So how do we explain that dichotomy? Because one would think that women of color are particularly disadvantaged, and at the same time, you have this happening at the other end. So is this lip service, or what more needs to be done in this regard?
So I think the first thing is to acknowledge that women of color do face more obstacles, you know, have less support in getting promotions. They're punished harshly for mistakes. They get less mentorship opportunities and lower salaries. I mean, three Latina engineers are suing Uber for mm-hmm. gender and racial discrimination because they have received lower salaries and less bonuses and were slow to being promoted. And so they're in their lawsuit saying that, you know, the system systematically undervalues women and people of color. And we know that women of color have to navigate intersecting systems of power. So it's not even just gender or race, but there are more layers like class, disability, gender identity, religion. And these all contribute to making someone more vulnerable to discrimination and violence. And this is also whether we are in the global north or in the global south. And Kimberly Crenshaw's work on intersectionality is really helpful in understanding the depth of women's experiences. And when we look at now women of color in senior management, I think it's important to see how, you know, a company could have a different face. I mean, even a face we like, but its mode of operations and the machinery is still the same. And Alicia Garza always says, you know, you can't mistake presence for power. And we also need to acknowledge that it also must be very difficult for the few women who are at the top to be there, because mm-hmm. if you're still the only one, then the culture cannot have changed much. And also for women of color at the top, there's the unreasonable standard that, you know, they have to be exceptional. And we also don't want tokenistic representation or for women of power to be appointed to senior positions to be used to deflect from a company's conduct. So for example, a very prominent company in South Africa appointed its first black female CEO. But this appointment came at a time when the company was facing a lot of scandals and public scrutiny. So it's also all about looking to see at what point do these appointments come, what kind of support is the person receiving, are they in positions of actual power? So investigating further.
Absolutely. Now, if a company were to listen to you, they would want to know what they should do next. So can you think of some specific steps that you would like companies to take to address the gender and race-based discrimination? Internal audit is one example. Working on deep culture is probably another way of getting at it. Listening more to women would be a third one. What are the other things you would like to see companies address?
Absolutely. And so I always think about it in terms of two processes that should always be ongoing. So I think one is for the company to reflect externally. What does its social footprint look like? So for example, are they paying their taxes? Mm-hmm. And tax is such an important conversation to have because it's linked to public services and the ability of the state to provide services for women and minorities in particular that need access to these services. Are the company's activities causing harm to the society or the environment? Because we also know women and marginalized communities are particularly impacted. So it's the external and then also the internal. So what does the company look from the inside? how does the internal compass point to human rights? And the only way it can is for a company to really understand the full picture of its operations. So it needs to find out, where are women and minority groups located? Are there sectors or teams where they're absent? Are they in positions with decision-making power? Looking at recruitment, supervision, payment processes to really understand the dynamics. And I think a very important thing is to have clear policies on sexual and racial harassment that have sanctions, that also have mechanisms for complaints, right? So that workers have avenues to report complaints without being worried about whether they'll risk a promotion or a bonus or even their jobs. So at the heart of it is accountability. Will there be accountability in the face of discrimination? That is really the question.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a very good menu for companies to take their role seriously. Thanks very much, Sanyu, and all the best with your work.
Thank you.